from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi there, I'm Bill DeYoung. Thanks for joining us here at the St. Pete Catalyst. This is the Catalyst Sessions. Today's guest, please welcome Jessica Thonan, who is a professor of theater at Eckerd College. We have loads to talk about. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me. This is fun.
She's right there on my screen. I suppose you can see her too, folks. I wanted to talk about Into the Wind, which it starts this week, which is to say your first virtual performance. It starts, this is, what's the 22nd? So it starts 24th, okay? And what are there, four performances?
There are four scheduled performances, all viewable on your computer screen. We're not piling into Benninger anytime soon, I fear. That's our campus theater. So we've scheduled four that you can view on our platform, ShowTix for You. I'm sure we can share that information maybe later, the website.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a show like we've never done before.
Well, this was written specifically to be performed virtually, right? And I mean, it has to do with like spatial differences between elements, between people. And why don't I just shut up, Jessica, and let you explain it?
Sure. I can start with our great moment of loss when we all realized last May that we weren't going to be elbow to elbow this fall, where we all said, just doesn't even feel ethical right now to think about having an audience, much less a group of our talented artists together on stage doing what we typically do. And as is my way, I let myself mourn for a day or two and then said, all right, let's go. Let's see what's next. And I started doing what it seems to be pretty common with virtual theater right now, looking at radio plays, or there was this huge treasure trove of Zoom plays being released and released and released.
Yeah.
But all of them felt a little bit to me like I was being told to sit down and eat my vegetables. Like, you have to do a show and you have to get something together for the fall for these students, for their classes.
That's what I was going to ask you. If you felt like, you know, I have an obligation to these students, you know, to do something.
Exactly. An obligation to the students to make sure they could keep training. And also for those that view the shows to keep them connected to the work. But, you know, we're in theater and none of us got into theater because our parents told us that's what we had to be when we grew up. We got into theater because we love it.
Kind of, and quite the contrary. I mean, a lot of people who say their parents said, well, you know, theater's fun, but you should get a real job.
Yes. Yes. And so I just thought when our work is really starting to feel like a requirement, there's something wrong. You've got to reconsider what you're doing entirely. So I threw out everything I was looking at the time, and I called up an old friend of mine, Jen Rapp, who is who helped me create the script and is also guest directing for this show. And we just said, all right, let's talk about what excites us and let's talk about what's inspiring us right now. And then from that, spent the summer writing this script with that goal of really using the platform and the sort of Zoom platform as a way to explore creative opportunities, not as a way to try to force what we used to do into the boxes, but just really, really looking at every wall we were coming up against as a creative opportunity to try something different that we wouldn't try.
Jen has quite a resume, which I want to talk about in a minute. It's vast. I want to know how, where you guys are friends from. I mean, she's done some amazing, not that you haven't, but she's done some amazing things on Broadway and everywhere else.
Please, let's brag a lot about my dear friend, Jen Rapp, because she's just phenomenal. Our group of friends always joke that she's the hardest working woman in show business, and she just has a real love for it. Recently, she's been 5 years running associate choreographer for The Illusionists on Broadway, every year increases their box office sales. She's a director and choreographer, has done a lot of work with shows like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood on stage and Thomas the Tank Engine Live. We actually met on that pirate ship in the picture behind me in Dora the Explorer's live pirate adventure.
Yeah.
So we toured with that show. gosh, so long ago, it feels like it never existed. It must have been around 2003, 2004, and just became close friends from then. And we're both of us have trouble matching up our schedules to work again. Last spring, we were able to, and it was not 2020. 2019.
Oh yeah, so that spring.
Yeah, that Maybe spring. The one where we actually did things on stage. And it's just such a joy to work with her. Not only is she this brilliant artist, but over the summer, you'll remember we were all pretty engaged and concerned with the way that civil rights are ongoing as an ambition in this country. And knowing that that was something I wanted to bring into the classroom too, an awareness that everything we do, we need to consider how we can be inclusive and how we can really try to make sure that everyone in the room is honored in their origins. And that's such a passion for her that it seemed like an easy fit. So it was like just great. Like the tiniest little things that have a great impact. For example, we have this character in the play that was originally the Owl King. Right? He eats Fate's eyes at some point and now can see all, right? That's a pretty it's a pretty fantastic character to see all and to have sort of this amazing all-encompassing power, but it was so specifically gendered and it assumed the fact that it should be a male character. And so we spent days searching for a better name for him where it could include any gender to have that type of power. And we ended up with the Almighty Owl. And now we find we prefer Almighty for most things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that well, that's the great thing about it's like literature. I mean, if you're writing, you're only limited to, you're not limited, I guess, is what it is. And I mean, you can take it anywhere you want. Is there a certain freedom in, I want to pursue one thing that you talked about though. You kind of rejected sort of the virtual things that were available to you. And said, let's write our own. Why was that important? I mean, why just saying, this is all part and parcel of what your students deserve. This, I think, goes to something that's kind of deep in your own kind of philosophy, why you did that.
Yes, I think I have like a history full of regret of doing that sometimes more often than I should. But I think here, what I was feeling with each play that I was reading was a sense of sitting in a despair of the moment, right? And even, you know, I'm watching everything I can watch at that time period because we love theater, but also to sort of do research for what we were doing. And most things were just leaving me so sad and so much deeper in a sense of despair. Now, that's not to say that there aren't great examples of virtual theater out there. It's just what I was experiencing at the time. And to me, it made sense to sort of just say, no, we're going to pretend like we're starting completely over. I mean, let's actually write a play that's for now, but that doesn't have us sitting in that despair, that reaches out for more hope and that focuses on the work rather than trying to recreate something that someone else is working through.
Can you tell the world, I guess, sort of the plot? I mean, I hear about the Almighty Owl and I'm very intrigued. What can you tell us about what happens? What is this story?
It's a bit avant-garde. Like I said, we've never done a play like this, not only because it's virtual, but because it's really these few stories that are stitched together where we see all of these almost impossible relationships that make attempts and seem to come up against everything, but we wage a bet for love, right? So we see the story of the owl and the moon who are so in love, but they're never in the sky at the same time. Though, I said that once on the phone and my 7-year-old pointed out, that's not true, the moon was up this morning. I was like, you're ruining my story here, kid. But nonetheless, it's the idea.
You can say what you want, yeah.
The idea is that, you know, really they only get to see each other when there's an eclipse, right? And in the story, time and fate fall in love with each other, but those around them get so nervous about their love affair, thinking that it's disturbing the society they've already created or that the future future could be rattled by their love affair, that even the stars conspire against them. Mm-hmm. And so we see these relationships again and again attempt to make connections. And then, though we don't necessarily see them succeed, what we get a sense of from it is the fact that there is a future possibility. Right. And that there is some connection always possible. I mean, even the innkeeper is sitting there making friends with the wind at one point when he's all alone in his inn for months after months. I suspect there might even be those among us who felt like they were making friends with the wind during the quarantine in March and April.
Sure.
We weren't seeing others. So at the end, what we found is that we were in a very creative way coming around to similar stories that other Zoom plays were, but the ending was filled with hope that there is a life after, that there's something more that can come.
So it is sort of a parable for the COVID era.
And, I think so. Yeah. Not intentionally, but when you get back to it, you can see, I mean, I think you write what you know, and we were certainly in the midst of it while we were writing, so there's no way that it didn't leak in to some extent.
How big is the cast? How many people are we talking about here?
This is a great question. It's very hard to respond because we have 15 students who were involved. And some of them were the voices. Some of them were the physical embodiment of the character. Some are puppeteers. But wherever they are, you know, I've got students from Spain to Alaska right now. And so aside from tackling Wi-Fi and time zones, wherever they are, they're on their own. So it's working through the fact that Allie, who's in Spain playing the sun, is also designing sound and designing her costume and setting up her surroundings for her scenery and her camera operator and all of those things. So we have 12 students enrolled in the class, but because of our unique phased return to campus, first years couldn't sign up for the class, and we wanted to keep them engaged too. So we invited some of our first years to do some of the voiceover work and embodiment work. So we have three from outside of the class as well.
Can you see this perhaps as a template for another template for the future? You know, a lot of folks in theater will talk to me about, you know, what we've learned, and we can take elements of this when we're back on stage physically, that maybe we can use elements of this kind of virtual togetherness to create, you know, a new hybrid theater. I mean, are you thinking that we can use this down the line?
I think it's a possibility. There are a lot of discussions. Now, New York Times just last, I don't know if it was Sunday or Thursday, put out an article about lessons learned from this period from theater. And again, there was some celebration for virtual theater for the fact that it's so inclusive, right? I don't have to be able to afford a ticket that's possibly upwards of $100 for one person to attend a night of theater at a very large musical theater in order to see it. I just need the smaller fee for my family to come around the computer together to see a show. So that's amazing, especially when you look at Disney Plus, what they did with Hamilton, bringing that show into so many homes. Yeah. Now people are invited to the conversation, and theater really should be for all. So there's that aspect. There's also the aspect that they've noticed that there's some eco opportunities here, right? Sadly, we aren't, for this show, building large sets or creating a great deal of stuff to go in the room with us, because it does come down straight to performance. Now, as a designer, I miss out on some of that, but I think as an option to do a virtual show here and there, we can offer some kindness to our planet as well. And just to speak
You mean by not tearing down trees to build big sets? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I think we want to do what's best for a show whenever we have it on stage, and I'm not opposed to that. I love a big, beautiful set, but if we could do one virtual show here and there, we certainly can lessen the impact, was the point in that article. And, you know, Bill, I just want to speak to this idea that you say when, not if. theater will get back to actually attending physically. I mean, anyone who knows theater history knows this isn't the first time that theaters have been shuttered. It's just for a purpose we've never seen before. And I have a great belief that history in some ways repeats itself. And I'm firmly committed to the fact that it's a when, not an if scenario. We're figuring out ways to get there, and we'll get there.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the thing you just made me think of, Jessica, was, again, a conversation I've had with a lot of people in the Equity theaters and otherwise, and my friends in, say, community theaters, that the virtual experience can never replace the actual experience of being in that communal thing, being in a room, and not just for the performers and the people who produce the show, but theater is a shared experience. It's a communal experience. So the idea that maybe it can augment. Eric Davis from Freefall, when I was talking to him a few weeks ago, he said, well, he's not a big fan of virtual stuff because he says, then you're just making TV. You know, he's more of a purist than a lot of people, and I appreciate that. But there is certainly, when you say, something to be said for, boy, I miss the experience, the three-dimensional experience of being in that room with those people and the lights and all that stuff.
Yeah, actually, Jen and I were, our director, were talking about that just last week when we were talking about viewing Hamilton, because both of us were privileged enough to see Hamilton live in person. And then we also saw it multiple times on Disney Plus afterwards. Okay. And it's a different experience. It certainly is.
Yeah.
And I think that in some ways I missed the gasps in the audience and, you know, the person sniffling 2 rows behind me and all of that, you know, the whole communal feeling of it. But as she pointed out, that experience wasn't so great when they went to go see it because they had someone next to them that was like kind of grumbling the whole time and taking up more space. So there's pluses and minuses to all of it. It is not the same. We can't ever refer to a virtual production and say, this is the same as live production.
In live production, you're in that world with those people.
Yeah.
You know, you're brought into that world. I can't see that virtually. I don't feel that way about it.
No, but the advantage, I think, of virtual theater, aside from the inclusive nature of it, is now you can see a lot more of the work that's being done. You know, if you were in the cheap seats, as I always am, I can't often see the faces of people. Well, now I can see everyone's face and I can hear all of the words, especially if I can toss on closed captioning. So again, there's some advantages there to being able to do it. So
let me ask you about you biographically. Where are you from? Where are you from and how did you get here to where you are now? I mean, that's the easy question.
I grew up in New Orleans until about high school. My brother and I joke that our parents got us out of there right on time before we could get into too much trouble. and then I spent high school in Mississippi. I went to multiple colleges and universities, as is the way of academia. Mississippi University for Women first. And then I went to University of Dallas in Irving, Texas.
Was that always theater for you? I mean, was that?
No. When I started at Mississippi University for Women, I was studying secondary education with a background in English and music. And focus in Shakespearean studies. Wow. So a little bit of the theater connection there, but I spent a summer at Texas Shakespeare Festival by accident, quite by accident, ended up working what I just thought was a summer job and found myself at a payphone. Remember those? late one night, crying, telling my dad, I don't think I can do what I thought I was going to do. I need to be in theater.
Wow. Yeah. That's a life-changing moment. Boy, everybody has their own variation on that. That one's very dramatic, though.
Yeah, my dad...
What was the show that night? Do you remember what was the play?
Well, I was working on shows that night, so I don't think it was... I don't know what show was on that night. I know the shows we did that summer.
But what was it about the experience that changed you so profoundly?
It was the first time in my life I was experiencing this communal effort towards what we all felt like it was a common good. You know, yeah. Everything else had been just go along, get along. But this was a group of people passionately and just in all together working towards this ultimate goal and also working towards yeah. personal training and just the conversations we were having about language and color and fabrics. I just thought, well, I had no idea this existed and I don't know how I could go back. Now that I know.
Yeah, I know. It's that moment in The Wizard of Oz when the door opens and everything's in color. Why would you want to go back into the house?
Yeah.
That's exactly the way I've always felt about theater. You know, I've done some community theater. I was in a rep company in Savannah for a while and never good enough to do anything with it, but it was so much fun. And what you just said about working together towards a common good, you know, it's like being in a rock and roll band. You're only as good as everybody else because you're all going to the same place. And I love that.
When you're thinking about rock and roll bands, you're automatically thinking about tour. And I mean, that was the best time of my life being on tour because that's your family that you're traveling with. You know everything that's going on with for good or bad. You know everything mm-hmm. that's going on with everybody. And because yeah, there's that communal good. The support system is there and the celebration is there and it's just amazing.
What did you tour with?
I toured with Dora the Explorer Live, which yeah. sounds laughable, but it was a huge show with Nickelodeon. And I was shocked later to find out when my boss was writing me a letter of recommendation when I was leaving tour to go into academia mm-hmm. and saying the millions of dollars of equipment I was responsible for. I didn't know it cost that much. If I had known, I would have been more nervous.
Perfect. Because I think Dora the Explorer, you know, it's been going on for a few years. I think it's played the Mahaffey, that tour. And I know the yeah. Daniel Tiger thing is here every year.
That's right.
That's all Jen's choreography still? Or do we know?
Oh, Daniel Tiger certainly is. She's still yeah. active with that. In fact, this was one of the perks of having Jen with us, aside from just deeply wanting to work with someone that I respect and have such a great time with. She was working with Daniel Tiger. They were meant to still be on tour. Well, what people don't realize is when these children's shows go on tour, they have a really important service that they do at the children's hospitals where the characters go and visit the kids.
Yes.
And even though the tour wasn't going on, the kids were still sick and lonely, right? Mm-hmm. So she was engaged with her cast to put together these virtual visits. And so she already brought to bear to the program this work on how to do a rehearsal like this and how to prepare for getting content recorded and edited together and could sort of share some of that experience. So we knew what some of the pitfalls could be and could plan for them.
Wow. How long have you been at Eckerd?
I'm pretty sure this is my 15th year.
Wow.
It feels like I just got here yesterday and I've always been here because it's such a home, right? It's such an amazing community. When I came to visit and I was saying goodbye at the airport, in my head was this thought, I don't know. I hope they hire me, but if they don't, I've got to figure out how to get back here. I mean, I was just smitten with Eckerd and with St. Petersburg immediately.
Yeah. Boy, that happens a lot. I was born and raised here and, again, not to belabor the point, but it's another conversation I have with folks. I left for a long time to go into journalism, but there was nothing going on here for years and years. And there's something so sweet and rewarding to hear people talking about the great cultural blossoming of this place. We don't call it a renaissance because there was never anything before. But it's, I talked to so many people who say, man, culturally, this town is culturally is just one part of it is so wonderful. And then I have to remember, you know, there were tumbleweeds blowing down Central Avenue when I was growing up, you know, I've written histories of the Bayfront Center and these other venues and, you know, the rock and roll tours, I got to tell you, in the old days, rarely even routed through Florida, much less to St. Petersburg. You know, in the end of the 60s, yeah. you started to get, you know, Hendrix and all that coming to like Curtis Sixon Hall in Tampa, but St. Petersburg was dead. You know, it was, and it's very nice to have, you know, people like you and all the rest of the theater community here. Tell me about the theater program at Eckerd. I'll stop babbling now. I mean,
I love hearing it. I mean, it's so, I mean, even in the 15 years I've been here, it's just St. Petersburg and downtown have completely changed. And the number of opportunities for theater seem to grow every year, despite odds, it seems. Like sometimes you think, wait, aren't we fully saturated for our population? But our community seems to really thrive and desire more and more artistic outlets, whether it's music or more traditional visual arts or theater. So it's a fantastic place to live.
Well, Eckerd, it's a pretty robust program with a lot of students. And
so Eckerd, as a liberal arts college, has we have two degrees now, which is a new thing at theater. Not Eckerd. Eckerd has lots of degrees, but our theater program now has, and always has had, our Bachelor of Arts degree, which is a generalist degree where we really hope to create artists who appreciate all aspects of the theatrical process, from acting to designing to history, all of it. Because the more sides you know of the equation, we all believe makes you a singular better performer, better artist, which is really great. And all with that foundation of the liberal arts. Well, we have some of our first students this year for our Bachelor of Fine Arts, which is possible through a partnership with Circle in the Square Theater School. For anyone who knows Circle in the Square's theater, the Broadway house right in the heart of Times Square, they might be surprised to learn that there's actually a theater school right below the stage. In sort of the basement of the theater is this amazing theater school that has this really rich history for all of the performances that have come out of it. And you can't beat the location for getting people to come to see the graduation showcase and things like that. So now our students have an opportunity. They can spend 2 years here in Florida doing the liberal arts side of the degree and also continuing to work on their craft here. And then they do 2 years of intense conservatory style study in New York at Circle in the Square Theater School.
Wow.
It's sort of a best of both worlds situation.
Oh, you had to say that. I know. That's amazing. That's amazing. Let's reiterate about Into the Wind, because we're just about out of time, and I want to be sure that people understand. It's September 24th through 27th, written by Jessica Thonen and Jen Rapp, directed by Jen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is entirely virtual. It's going to be cool as all get out. Where does one get tickets? What's the website?
You go to showticksforyou.com/events/into the wind. So it's show, as you might expect, SHOWTIX, number 4, letter U, .com/events/into the wind, all one word. And then people can pick which night they want to go. We have a matinee on Sunday. The content is entirely appropriate for children, though it is geared for an adult experience. But my kids will be watching.
Did you say somebody's eyes get eaten?
Oh, sure. But kids are used to that kind of stuff. I mean, you remember Hansel and Gretel? They put them in an oven.
I don't know this. Wow. I mean, couldn't you, Jessica, sort of... This is the way I would do it because I'll never remember all that stuff. Couldn't I just Google Eckerd Theater Into the Wind and something would come up and I could, that's the easy way, folks. That's
absolutely
like me do.
Absolutely. You could do that. That would be an easy way to do it. And then it'll be, as you said, September 24th, 25th and 26th at 8 PM, September 27th at 2 PM. And then after that, we might do a little on-demand period for people who would prefer to watch things in the middle of the night or just whenever they like.
Next, these are all live, by the way. It's not like, oh, the next day we're going to show the video from the night before. You do it live each time, virtually live.
No, because of the virtual nature of things, it is all pre-recorded and put together. And so
it's so complicated. Yeah.
I know. Well, the lag time on Zoom or on or the Wi-Fi challenges that can occur are a little bit too much for my nerves. So we're having it all put together. And then we're fortunate that we have a film class right now.
Oh, yeah.
Who have been, they probably pulled an all-nighter just last night to keep getting things edited through. Their professor, Nick Correo, has just been fantastic offering them support and supervising that.
Let's remember that the sun is, in fact, in Spain. So it can't be that easy to do. I mean, we've had enough technical problems here, which you didn't see, but I did. But by the time people see this, it'll look great. Jessica Thonin, Eckerd College Theater Department, thank you so much for being my guest today.
This was so much fun. Thanks for inviting me.
It's been fun for me too, and we'll look forward to talking to you again. Into the Wind, September 24th through 27th. Check it out, folks. Jessica, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
See you. Bye.
From stpetecatalyst.com.